Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hold That Thought. My name's John Samuel, and I'm going to be your host. For those of you who are new to this podcast, Hold That Thought was designed to help positively influence music industry folks. My belief is that good conversations create lasting memories. Before we jump into episode 17, let's take a brief minute to hear from our main sponsor. This podcast is sponsored by CJS Productions. Music is our passion, and good music is meant to be shared. Find us online at cjslivemusic.com. Episode 17 with Kevin Broadway. This segment was so much fun and so inspiring. Anytime I get a chance to speak with someone who loves stepping out of his comfort zone and reinventing himself, there is major lessons to be learned from this. First, beforehand, take a second and check out Kevin's teacher talk. It is profound and will give you a little bit more insight before listening to this podcast. In this episode, we wrapped about teaching, comfort zones, reinventing yourself, being in the moment, self-talk, Neil Peart, and our good friend, Jacob Blazier. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy episode 17 with Kevin Broadway. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hold That Thought, episode 17 with Kevin Broadway. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Kevin, we were just discussing prior to the recording how we came in under each other's radar, and it's pretty amazing the way social media offers a chance for people to connect, because I love the fact that I was able to connect with you while I'm in Florida and you're in Charlotte, and I was able to see your latest speech that you did.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, this is the type of conversation that probably would not have ever happened 20 years ago. But, you know, a friend of a friend of a friend. And, you know, here we are speaking, whatever, 12 hours apart from each other. But it's all sounding supernatural. So, kind of crazy.
Yeah, which is great. And for those of you listening, this is my actual first time doing a podcast by phone. So I think it's going to be smooth and we'll be able to work out the kinks. If not, it's going to be an amazing learning lesson. But
there you go.
But Kevin is a teacher by day and singer by night. Kevin teaches at Torrance Creek Elementary, where you teach music, correct?
That's right. I teach about 650 kindergarten through fifth graders every week. And so I see every kid in the school. And yeah, this is my fifth year teaching there, and I love it. It's the best job ever.
That is awesome. And you are a singer by night. You play in a acoustic duo, if I'm not mistaken, called 23 over 4, correct?
That is right. Yeah. And it's actually, so it's me. I play acoustic guitar and sing. And then my percussionist and keyboard player, he is another elementary school music teacher. So we're both fighting the good fight by day and then going out and having fun at night. And
that's cool. How many gigs are you guys still playing?
Well, so we're kind of in an interesting pattern right now to where, you know, I know we just met, but I'm kind of been having some vocal issues as of late. I have a polyp that I've developed from teaching and singing so often. So I've taken the spring off. And I'm doing some vocal therapy with a speech pathologist here in town. And I'm hoping to be up and running again by the summer. But usually, like the last 2 years that we've been together, we've done about 200 shows a year. So, you know, we're hitting it pretty hard every weekend, sometimes during the week. And yeah, you know, but again, it's kind of slowed down for right now. So, which is interesting because now finally the radio started playing our songs. And people are like, where are you playing? And I'm like, well, we're not, you know, but listen to the radio. You'll hear us.
Yeah. Taking a break always is beneficial. When you first started playing, when you first started teaching and you were still balancing those 200 gigs, what was the biggest challenge for you?
Honestly, probably the easiest answer would be sleep. And, you know, being, because when you, it doesn't matter what you do at night. And if you stay up all night, if you go to bed at 10 at night, you know, like you're going to show up in the morning and there's going to be 25 kids staring at you that need the best version of you that they can get. And I made a mistake my very first year teaching, probably about 6 months in. I came in after a gig one night and I didn't get enough sleep. And, you know, I might have had too much to drink. And I came in and I mean, I was a shell of the teacher that I needed to be. And I learned immediately. And I felt terrible. And I learned immediately, okay, you know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to do this right. And I'm going to have to make sure that I take care of my body and get the right amount of sleep, because these kids, you know, they need me at my best. And coming in and saying, well, you know, it was a late night last night, that doesn't cut it in the classroom. So that was really the biggest challenge, is being able to, you know, I guess be mature enough to make the decisions when I'm at the gig to say, no, I don't need to drink in the second set. And I do need to pack my gear up and I do need to bounce home real quick. You know, that was kind of hard to figure out, because I don't come from that school of thought originally.
Since that's a really valuable lesson that you can actually flip and put into the music world. If you're going into playing a cover show and you're not, you're not playing your best, do you see, what's something that we could teach aspiring musicians? What kind of signs could we teach from the crowd that would offer, that would give a glimpse to a musician, say, hey, if you can look out for this type of sign? What do you think? Is there anything out there where you're coming in a show and you're not really giving your best? What kind of signs could we throw off to aspiring musicians?
Well, I mean, I think, and you know, maybe this is just because I've done it so much. I think anytime you do anything a lot, you kind of have an eye for it or an ear for it when you see it. But I can see through someone pretty quickly if they're faking it or if they're not sincere in what they're doing. And I've always tried to, you know, my main line is, I say, I don't phone any show in. I don't phone it in. I don't phone a song in. I don't take a set off. You know, I try to go out there and just throw it all out as hard as I can. And I do that in the classroom as well. And I think that's why my body and my voice just kind of got so tired. But I think, you know, if you're a musician and you're up there and you're not giving it your 100% and you're not being honest. Even if you're singing cover songs, you know, you can do that in a true and honest way. And I think if you're delivering it in a passionate way where you're not looking at the TV, you're not thinking about, you know, what drama's going on outside your life off the stage. I mean, if you can be in that moment, then I think that's when audiences pay attention. And I think when you look out and you see everybody on their phone or they're talking or they're, you know, after you stop and no one claps, I think that's maybe a time for you to just take a little step back and say, okay, am I doing this as well as I can do it? Or can I dig in deeper? And I think that's something, you know, that's something I talk about in this teacher talk that we're going to get to in a little bit. But, you know, I try to embody that on stage and in the classroom as well.
What kind of reminders do the students give you when they put you in check? So if you're coming in and you're having an off day, which we are going to elaborate with your talk, because your talk is extremely profound. But before you got to reinventing yourself, because I know kids are extremely blunt. Did they just come out and put you in check when you were having an off day?
Well, it's more of a, I think it manifests itself a little more in behavior than anything else, because I find when I'm not at my peak, I find what tends to happen is I tend to let some of the little things just kind of like, you know, they start to build up, and pretty soon you've got a bunch of kids that aren't paying attention. They're goofing off. They're doing whatever. And I'm not taking the time to properly refocus or reengage or do something that's more exciting for them. I'm just kind of like, well, look, this is what I'm teaching. And if you're not feeling it, then, you know, that's on you. That's not on me. But it's actually on me. Like, I mean, that's where I need to redirect myself. And so I think I see it a lot in the behaviors, or sometimes you can look out and, you know, if you see some kids kind of just like dazing out, kind of like staring at the walls, it's like, all right, clearly I need to switch it up. And it's just like being a musician. You know, if you see people aren't paying attention, you're like, if it's a cover show, like, okay, clearly they aren't digging the Ed Sheeran, you know, maybe I should I don't know, do something else, you know? So it's just kind of reading those cues. I think you read an audience on stage, you read an audience in the class, and they'll give you feedback if you're paying attention.
If you were coaching musicians, cover musicians especially, people who go out there and are playing 4 to 5 cover shows a week, they're doing the same thing. What would be your advice to them to how to constantly reinvent themselves? What would be something that you could pass along to them?
That's a good question. And I think about that a lot as someone who does, you know, the bulk of the sets that I play are cover sets. And then, you know, I play a lot of originals, but I think, you know, one thing I always try to do is I never write a set list. I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs that I can pull from at any moment. And I think it's being open to the possibilities of what each different show could be. And I think if you are just kind of close to, well, okay, I just did this song, and usually after that I do this song, or I'm in A minor, so I've got to go into, you know, Mary Jane's Last Dance by Tom Petty, because that's in A minor and everyone loves that song. I think when you get stuck in those ruts, I think if you can take a step back and you can say, all right, maybe I usually go into Mary Jane's Last Dance during this jam, but I'm not feeling that. And so why am I going to force it? Be open to the possibility of something else happening. And I think if you are, you'll find you'll be pulling different songs. You'll be playing things in different order. You know, don't start off with the same opener. Start off with something that's completely different than what you usually do. If you usually play an energetic opener, open up with something that's really like soft and heartfelt that showcases your voice and bring people in, and then give them something that's a little banging that they can kind of latch onto, you know, just being open to the differences and the possibilities that each different night can offer. I think that naturally will lend itself to just kind of staying out of a rut and having different shows every night.
That is extremely good advice. And for anyone actually listening to this podcast, please rewind that segment and listen to it. We work with a lot of cover musicians, and I don't play music. I just book bands, but I do something very similar to play music, and that's bartend. I've been bartending for 21 years, and it was about 4 or 5 years ago my wife put me in check. I was coming home. I was completely miserable. I was doing the same thing. It was Groundhog Day over and over. And so, you know, essentially I was that guy playing the same set list. Playing the same 3 sets, but I was just going into bartending and doing it. And I did a couple things to help me get out of that rut. One was a gratitude journal.
Yeah.
Which was really beneficial. And it wasn't, even if you don't want to do a gratitude journal, just journaling in general, getting stuff on paper really, really does help. And it helps to see where you're at. Another thing I did, which I still struggle with, was complaining. I try to eliminate all the complaining. And you'll be amazed. Like, if you can make it through a shift without complaining, you're going like, wow, my mindset is just completely different. And when you don't keep track of stuff like that, you don't really know how bad you get.
Go ahead.
No, and I was just going to say that those were the things that kind of helped me get out of that rut. And this is a really good segment into your teacher talk. Because one of the things that I was mesmerized about by your teacher talk was when you were able to pull out all your journals.
Yeah.
Set those journals aside and say, I am no longer going to go through these teacher lessons and do the same thing that I did yesterday. So let's get back let me take a step back. Have you always journaled and kept track of all of your teaching days?
Well, yeah. So what you saw in that video, those were the actual lesson plans that I had written from day one of me being a teacher until just the beginning of this year. So, you know, if you look through, it'd be like, you know, April 13th of 2014. And it would be what I was teaching first grade that day, what I taught second grade. And, you know, then on those would be little notes of, okay, you know, this worked, don't do this, change this, add this little movement here. And it's, you know, it's a really important, I don't know that people necessarily know all that goes in behind the scenes of teaching. It's not just getting up there and, oh, well, he played music for 20 years, so he's now teaching music. You know, there's a whole lot that goes into the preparation of being able to teach 25 kids at a time. And so that was all the lesson plans and everything that I'd compiled over the years. And yeah, and I mean, I keep very detailed records of all that stuff. And that's, you know, what I was saying is at the beginning of the year when I had the conversation with the guy, and he was like, oh, this is your fifth year. You got the routine down. And looking at all those books, it's like, yeah, it had become a routine, you know, and I was done with it. I was like, I'm just going to completely get rid of this stuff. Start over. If you know what, if it's a dumpster fire, I'm good enough that I'll be able to pull myself out of it and I'm going to learn from it. But, you know, it ended up being the best thing I could ever do. And instead of, you know, being this negative thing that, oh, things weren't working. I mean, things were working 10 times better than they ever were because I was just coming at it from a fresh perspective. It was awesome. It was the best thing I could have done.
Before I get into the speech, because I'm going to go into a intro into your speech. With keeping your detailed logs, do you still do that now? Do you still log what you're doing every day with the students?
Yep. Yeah, I do. So, you know, I imagine what's going to happen, or what I hope would happen, I suppose, is, you know, a couple years from now, maybe next year, maybe 5 years down the road, all the stuff that I've compiled in those years, I'm going to chuck it on the shelf and then I'm going to start over again. You know, I mean, I think that kind of continuous challenging of yourself is kind of what makes you better. And it's the kind of thing, again, I mean, I hate to just, I sound like a broken record, but you know, if you do it on stage and I think it comes across in a performance, you do it in front of 25 kids and it comes across there too. You know, they're your audience from the 9-to-5 job, you know?
What made you keep those records? Was it because you wanted to be organized? Or was it because because you wanted to learn and look back from each day?
Well, I mean, it was honestly, so what it is, you know, once you do a lesson, then you've kind of got that one in your back pocket. And so if I ever need to teach a certain skill, you know, I can go back and flip through those and be like, how did I teach this last year? And then look at the lesson and I've got it all there. And I'm like, oh, that's how I taught it. It's kind of like having, you know, like a lyric book or like an iPad full of lyrics. It's like, okay, well, I learned, you know, X amount of songs last year. And so now I can just kind of pull from those anytime I want, you know?
That's great. And the reason why I'm digging into that and asking that is because I really feel that it's extremely important to log your progress. One of the things I notice with people is like they make these great, elaborate New Year's resolutions. And I did it for years. I jotted all down my New Year's resolutions and I never stuck with them. I failed miserably. And it wasn't until about 3 or 4 years ago that I actually started accomplishing these goals. And the reason being was it because I started logging everything. And I also started checking back in on my progress. Mm-hmm. So it was a self-progress report where I would look back in and go, okay, I'm doing really strong in this area. I'm hitting the gym every day. It's going well. But I'm lacking on my business goals. So I was able to go back and forth and keep chart of where I'm going. And I feel that if you really want to accomplish a goal, just take 5-10 minutes at the end of the day and log your day. That way you have a record of it. You can go back to it. You can see what works and what doesn't work. So that's one of the things. So
yeah, man. And it holds you accountable too. I mean, if you go through and you look and you're like, okay, here's where I was a month ago and this is where I wanted to be. And man, here I am 30 days later. And what have I accomplished? You know? And then it's kind of like, all right, well, I better start working harder. You know, so yeah, it's a good way to hold yourself accountable too.
Yeah, and when you and if you can check and like, so if you can log in 15 minutes at the end of the day with a little simple journaling, but then on a weekly basis or a bi-weekly basis, you can look back at your goals and mm-hmm. actually see, okay, I'm progressing here. When you see it down on paper, you're held much more accountable and you're checking in and you can see, okay, I got to step it up. One of the things I recently did was started visualizing my goals.
Uh-huh. That's so, dude, let me tell you something, man. My fiance she's a realtor and she's wildly successful at it. And she does these like daily affirmations and like sets her goals and, you know, sticks to them and talks about them and thinks about them and meditates about them. And like, you know, I mean, she's really, really into the idea of thinking your way into like positive sort of like action and goal, you know, achieving. And I'm watching it from her. And, you know, at first, like, it's real easy to look at that and be like, what is this mumbo jumbo? Why are you writing this 25 times down on a piece of paper? And then like a couple weeks later, when you see that thing done, you're like, wow. Okay. Well, you know,
it blew my mind. So when I was a young kid, I played high school basketball and my coach always was like, okay, we got a big game coming up tonight. I want you to spend a couple minutes and visualize yourself making every basket, visualize mm-hmm. yourself playing flawlessly. You know, when you're 15, 16, you're like, yeah, man, when I get home from practice, I'm going to jam on some video games and probably eat some pizza. Right. The last thing I'm really going to do is visualize my goals. So I always push that back. And then last year in April, it's actually, this is almost a year of celebration. I challenged myself and did my first paddleboard race. Nice. It was a open water 4 mile paddleboard race. And in this paddleboard race, the night before, I was nervous as could be. I was stepping outside my comfort zone, doing something with, I think there was 65 other racers. It was something I hadn't done. I had not done any competitive sports in a long time. So it was completely out of my comfort zone. Probably I was in really good shape. I had been training for it, but nowhere near like the race shape everyone was in. So the day of, there were 12 to 15 mile hour winds. The night before, I was nervous as could be. And after a little meditation session, I got on the computer and I started researching, and everything I came across to like peak performance athletic wise was kept on bringing me back. All my Google searches kept on bringing me back to visualizing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, cool. I'm just going to take a couple minutes, and I visualized myself finishing the race and details, you know, paddling and getting jump starting and staying on the board and all that. And then right before in the morning, I did the same thing. I just visualized myself. It was like a quick 5 minutes. I got out to the race. The weather was nasty, 12 to 15 mile an hour winds. Well, from the get-go, from the horn, racers were just dropping off left and right. I fell a couple times, got back on the board. Well, about a mile into the race, I completely got sideswiped by a wave, dropped my paddle, and as soon as I went to grab my paddle, it was gone.
Oh, wow.
So here I am in 15 feet of water, a mile into the race, 3 miles to go, and I had no paddle. So the safety boat came over and he gave me two options. And he said, the first option is that I take you in right now. The second option is I let you swim to the second mile marker and then I take you in. Well, neither one of those options really worked for me. So I got, I got on the board and I just started swimming it like a surfboard. Mm-hmm. I got about a mile and another half mile into it and my arms were just spent. Another safety boat came by. And he goes, hey, man, what happened? I told him I lost my paddle. I go, by any chance, do you have a paddle? He gave me a half a canoe paddle. So I got up and I finished the race and I finished dead last.
finished all 4 miles with a half a canoe paddle. But dude, one of the crazy things I really learned from that lesson was at no point was I stressed. At no point did I think about quitting, because the night before and the morning before, I had already finished the race.
Yeah.
And the way our minds work, the one cool thing about visualizing is that our minds don't know if it's reality or if we're just dreaming it up. So one of the things I learned is when I started doing more visualization is that if you've already done it in your head, the next day when you go to do a assignment or a task that you just don't want anything to do with, you know, like sitting down at the computer and journaling or writing or, you know, cleaning up your website or whatever it may be, you've already done it in your head. So now it's not that painful.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's good stuff, man.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm probably going to do a whole separate podcast on that because it was such a great learning experience. So let's jump in. For those of you who don't know, I'm going to add this in the show link. Kevin did a very profound teacher talk, and it was on, it's called Reinvent Your Routine. And I encourage every single one of you to get on the show notes, do a Google search and pull up the video and watch it, because this is something I'm really thinking about with my business right now. And I think it's something that everyone can benefit. The show was actually designed for teachers, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. The whole event was put on by this, it's called the CMS Foundation, and so it's the Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools Foundation. And, you know, it was an idea of getting, you know, high-level teachers to come out and speak to other teachers and administrators and stuff and, you know, kind of inspire them or give them some new, you know, fire or, like, fuel to the fire. And so it was definitely designed towards teachers. You know, I tried to make mine a little more universally applicable, I would say. You know, and so I think there's things that you can definitely take away from other walks of life, but it was certainly aimed towards, you know, making people better teachers. 'Cause that's kind of where my heart is right now, you know?
Yeah, no. And that is amazing. And you can definitely, if you're not a teacher, do not be afraid to watch this video, because there's a lot to learn in this video. And whether you're a cover musician or booking agent or teacher, whatever you do, there's a lot of key takeaways. What do you think was the significant moment that really made you reevaluate those lesson plans?
Yeah, I think, the exact moment I can remember it, and I talk about it in the talk, is when I'm, you know, speaking to a guy who's been doing it for 20 years, and he said, you know, oh, this is your fifth year. Well, you've got the routine down. And I just immediately snapped. It was like someone just smacked me on the side of the head. It was like, you don't want to be that guy 20 years down the road where you've been teaching the same thing over and over again. And this is a great teacher. I'm not, you know, I'm sure he knows who he is, and I'm not saying anything bad about him. I think it was just an offhanded comment that he made. But I took it, you know, very personally and said, I just don't want to be that. And so I went back that very next day and I just kind of sat there at my desk. And this is, you know, a week before the kids are coming back to school, maybe even 4 or 5 days. And, you know, I said, okay, well, I've got to do something different. And so I just kind of started thinking, all right, well, how can I just approach this differently? And I went in and I kind of just rearranged my whole room and got rid of all my old lesson plans and all the old like crutches that I was using. And, I just dove in head first and basically was like, well, we'll see how this goes. And, you know, again, I think with that fresh kind of attitude of like, I don't know what's going to happen, so I'm going to have to solve these problems as they're occurring instead of relying upon, you know, having taught this lesson 5 years in a row and I know what's going to happen. I have to solve the problem in the moment. And it got my brain working and I started just doing different creative things. And, you know, I think just putting myself out of my comfort zone, you know, that's made all the difference. But that conversation was definitely the moment that I knew. Now, you know, before then I'd had these thoughts of like, gosh, I'm just getting kind of bored. I don't feel challenged anymore. And, you know, what is going on here? But that was the moment that sort of smacked me across the head.
Did you ever have any, before that moment, did you ever have any similar self-talk like that fellow teacher where you just slip up into the routine and, you know, oh, that's just the way it is? Or,
yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's kind of a natural thing is once you get good at something, I think it's real easy to rely upon, you know, just either your natural talent or the talent that you've developed. I mean, so I think I would, if I'm being honest, I could say, you know, a few years in, once I'd sort of really honed my skills at teaching, I could do it on autopilot. And I knew, okay, this is not as good as I can be doing this job as well as I can do it, you know? And so I could have probably told you that a couple of years ago, but I finally just sort of made the decision and put my foot down and said, that's not going to be good enough for me anymore. I aspire to better.
Now, had you heard the story of Neil Peart before or after? Was it something that just popped up in your head at the during this whole time?
Yeah, so that was kind of, you know, as I was, I mean, I'm a huge Rush fan and, you know, so I've seen all the documentaries and I've seen him live a bunch of times. And, you know, so I was well aware of kind of his journey from reinventing himself. And once I kind of thought about it, I remember specifically, I texted a friend of mine who lives up in Ohio, who's the guy who introduced me to Rush. And I said, you know, I know this is on a DVD or something somewhere, but there's, you know, this part where Neil's talking about, you know, how he thought he could do it better and he wanted to train with this jazz drummer and totally changed the way he did everything. And so he led me to the clip, you know, and I found it on YouTube. If you want to see it, it's, you can search Neil Peart, Freddie Gruber, and this little clip will come up of Neil talking about how he changed his style after, you know, working with Freddie Gruber. And I kind of immediately paralleled myself, my situation of like, yeah, you know, I'm pretty good at this whole teaching thing. I was teacher of the year last year, you know, my choir's just kicking ass and, you know, everyone around the city knows who we are, but I can do it better. And I think if I search out active ways to get better at my craft, I think I can have an even bigger impact. And that was kind of the parallel that I made.
That's just amazing. It takes a lot of, I don't know what the word I'm looking here, maybe self-will, maybe self-recognition, like realizing that that you're, even though you're teacher of the year, you've grown a 13 member choir to an 105, was that correct? 105?
Yeah, 105 kids.
105 fourth and fifth grade choir. Mm-hmm. That's huge. A lot of people would get in that comfort zone. A lot of people I've seen now get in that comfort zone in every type of profession out there.
Yeah. Well, and...
Oh, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, just to just kind of real quick, just to kind of jump on what you're saying there. One of the reasons, so a mutual friend of ours, Jacob Blazer from Jacob and the Good People. I think one of the reasons I respect him so much, and you know, I've known him a long time, is that that's a dude who musically, when I watch him, I know he's not just going through the motions and sitting on his laurels. I mean, every time I see him, it's a different show. It's a different presentation. He's trying to do something different to take it to another level. And I respect that. And that's something, you know, when I play, I model myself after that. And I say, look, this is someone who's doing it on a level that's higher than what I'm doing it. And I'm aiming for that. And I think I was kind of doing that in the classroom too, of like, look, I can do better. You know, I don't care how good you say I am. I know I can do better. So I'm going to work harder.
This podcast is extremely motivating. Like when I hear you talk about Jacob, I haven't seen Jacob play in probably 2 years, but my last memory of seeing him play down at the Palm on Clearwater Beach was that it wasn't your typical cover show. It was, he was playing a cover gig. That's what the Palm Pavilion promotes. It's a beach. Mm-hmm. It's a beach bar that showcases cover music. But Jacob was not playing a cover gig. He was pouring his heart into it, and he was doing something that I don't see many musicians do in this area. And if, and even though I have not seen Jacob play in the last 2 years, I can tell by his marketing, I can tell by his following and the way his followers interact and engage with him, that he is constantly growing. I mean, you watch some of his new Instagram videos, and it takes a lot not to get stagnant, especially he's one of the few people that you look at his marketing and you know he's putting the same amount of energy into his marketing as he's putting into his self-growth, that he's just going up, and there's never a point where he's at the top of his game.
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally agree. And that's why I respect him so much, you know, as a musician, as a person. I mean, I think when you look at them, you know, and you know, I obviously have seen them in the last couple of years, and I'm sure, you know, you kind of, with your history, you know what I'm talking about. Like, when they set up, you're like, okay, yeah, this is legit. Like, this, I mean, full ass merch table, lights everywhere, and it's not just like the presentation. I mean, the sound is, you know, it's something special, man. And so, you know, I just kind of wanted to throw that out, just because we both know the guy, and you know, any chance you can plug someone who's just killing it. You know,
he's definitely killing it. It's the ambiance. I mean, you are right. Like, the sound, the stage, the lighting, the merch table, the constant switching of merch items. Guys get tired, man. They it takes them forever to create one band logo shirt, and they stay with that logo shirt. I don't think I've seen the same logo twice with Jacob.
I know it's pretty crazy.
I think is what is so respectful. And for aspiring musicians listening to this right now, you got to find a way to avoid comfortable spots. Teachers, I hope there's some teachers who are going to listen to this podcast as well. Don't get comfortable. What would be a couple things that you could encourage people to do to avoid those pitfalls and not get comfortable?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, some of the things we've talked about, you know, I think constantly self-reflecting. I think if you can be honest with yourself about where you're at and what you're doing, then I think you'll naturally see areas you can grow. And I think if you try to see yourself, you know, as this perfect entity who's can do no wrong and who's just killing it in life, then yeah, you're probably not going to have any desire to get better. But I think if you're honest with yourself, I've got a million areas in my life that I can grow. You know, professionally, I'm trying to do it as well as I can. You know, personally, the list is astronomical, you know, the things I could get better at. And if I'm not honest with myself about them, that's never going to happen. So I think constant self-reflection and honesty to yourself is the place to start. And then, you know, I think it's okay to look at someone who's doing it better than you are. And I think, you know, for musicians, that's totally okay. For teachers steal all the time. And I mean, I steal lessons. I steal stuff. It's like, okay, I saw a teacher do this and it worked great. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring it to my class, and it's going to be my style, but it's going to be, you know, their activity, but I'm going to do it in my crazy way where I'm jumping on tables and screaming and yelling, you know, and it might not look that way in their class, but I totally got the idea from them. So finding someone who's doing things better than you, look up to them, do it. And, you know, just not being comfortable. I mean, once you get to a certain level, realize that there's another level for you. And if there's not, then maybe you're in the wrong building and you need to go find a building that's got more levels. And, you know, that's kind of what I always try to stay focused on. And then, you know, above all, it's, you know, I think one thing that comes with a small level of success or a level of, like, you know, people noticing you is to just kind of stay humble and realize the reason why you're doing the things you're doing. And for me, it's teaching the kids, and it's to make, you know, my community, my state, a more compassionate, artistic place, a place where kids are comfortable in their own skin. Kids feel comfortable speaking and singing in front of each other. You know, kids aren't judging each other. That's the bottom line for me. So, I mean, I could literally, like, if the president of the world heard this podcast tomorrow and said, Kevin Brawley, that was the most amazing thing I've ever heard in my life. I want you to be vice president of music of the world. I know this is ridiculous. I'm just saying, if that were to happen tomorrow, the first thing I would need to do is remind myself, yes, that's great that I was just appointed to this great position because I've worked so hard, but I need to remember it's all about those kids that I'm teaching and making their lives better so that the world is better for them. And if you can stay humble, I think things like that are going to happen naturally for you.
Yeah, staying humble is huge. To add into that, I think self-talk is really huge.
Yes.
Yep. Self-talk, because people beat themselves up so much. I did it for years. And,
yeah.
And the self-talk is what's going to lead you to getting out of that comfort zone.
Yep. Because, and I always tell my kids, I'm sorry to interrupt. It's tough on a phone.
Don't apologize. This podcast is about you.
Right on. Well, I completely forget what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. So I feel like, God, I just forgot it again. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, you're good. No worries.
Maybe I'll go back and edit this part out. No, John, I'm sorry.
It's all good. So what I was going to say about self-talk is that if you have negative self-talk, it's going to block you from getting out of your comfort zone.
Yes. Yes.
One of the things I've discussed earlier on earlier episodes on this podcast was networking and collaborating with other musicians. Mm-hmm. A way to get your music out there. It's like what we're doing with this podcast. I'm able to connect with you. You're able to connect with me. We're able to build a relationship by having this great conversation. I mean, even prior to this conversation, just my research on your teacher talk was amazing because I had never heard the story about Neil. And as a fellow public speaker, a Toastmaster, your speech was once again very profound because it had so much good content and such a valuable learning lesson that so many people can use. But I would have never came across that. And had I never started this podcast, I probably would not be reaching out and putting myself out there to make the connections that I'm trying to make so that I can learn from other people.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I think about, I mean, like, you know, where your podcast and who knows how it's going to evolve in the future, you know, I mean, but starting out as like a, you know, a music oriented music business kind of thing. And then here you are. And yeah, I mean, I make music and music is, you know, an enormous part of my life, but we've mostly talked about teaching. You know, I mean, we've talked about an elementary school teacher from North Carolina. And when you started your podcast, I doubt that that probably would have been on your radar. And you know,
no,
here
not
we are
at
today.
All.
Right?
No, because, you know, when I think I was very confused with starting the podcast. I mean, I'm not confused. I wanted to start the podcast because I wanted there to be a forum for musicians to listen to and learn from people who are in the trenches.
Yeah.
You know, if you get on there and you get on iTunes and YouTube and you start Googling all these especially podcasts on the music business, is you come across a lot of the professionals who are 20, 30 years in. Bob Lefsetz, who is a huge music blogger, and he's having all these people on that I could never connect. But that wasn't my goal with the podcast. I like to connect with the people in the trenches. And the reason being is because I've spent so much time behind the bar. And one of the biggest lessons I learned from bartending after working, you know, three or four different bars and different styles is that the owners The bars very rarely communicate with the bartenders and say, you know, what is going on in the trenches? Tell me about what people like or what people don't like. And they don't, they rarely take the time and learn from the people who are doing the daily grind, the job every day. Yeah. And that was what I really wanted to jump into, was I wanted to connect with the guys who play 200 cover gigs. I want to connect with the guys who get out of playing cover gigs and who have stepped into being music teachers at elementary schools and sound techs and booking agents. Those are the people that are in it. Those are the people that we all can learn something from.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I feel I talk about my gigs all the time, or if I have a, you know, a special gig or a large gig. I've played some pretty big shows in my life, and you know, I always go back and I'll tell my kids about it. And I think, you know, them hearing about the things that I do outside of the class, it lends a legitimacy to what I teach, you know, in the day. And I think that kind of experience is stuff that just needs to be shared. And so I think a podcast like this is incredibly important for people who are trying to just figure out their way or figure out, you know, like we were talking, is there someone who's doing it better? And I, you know, I don't know that I am, I don't know who is, but like, you know, if there's something that someone can get from this, I really hope they have, you know?
That's really cool. Thank you. Thank you very much. That is really what I want to accomplish with this podcast and get it out there. What are some of the lessons these kids teach you? Like, I'm sure you just got to run into some amazingly talented kids. I got a 7 and 3 year old, and every day they surprise me by what they say or a picture they paint or what they do. I mean, have they taught you what are some of the lessons they've taught you?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest kind of takeaways that I've ever had from teaching elementary school is just how fearless most of them are. Like, I've really set my room up to be a place where, you know, they can experiment with things, they can make different sounds with their voice, they can try new things. And I always say that it's okay to fail. I encourage failure in my class. We don't laugh at anyone who fails. We cheer them on and say, that was awesome. Thank you for trying something new. Let's go do it better next time. And I think, you know, just when you think about kids and these kids I teach, you know, a lot of them think about, let me just real quick, I'll set the stage. How many adults do you know that would feel comfortable speaking in front of a room full of other adults? And then take that number and say, how many adults would feel comfortable singing in front of a room full of adults? And the number's just going to diminish drastically. And what I'm trying to accomplish in my class is to where these kids are totally comfortable in front of a crowd. They feel fine. It literally should not even move their dial one way or another. And so I think kids just have this like sense of like, if no one has ever told them they can't do it, then they just assume that they can. And that's one thing that I'm trying to really get better at, is to say, okay, yeah, I'm 41 years old, but you know, what's the box that I've put myself in, and why is it there? Can I get rid of that box? Because I'm teaching these kids every day that they don't have that box, and I'm telling them not to have that box. So maybe I should start taking some of my own advice, you know? And that's probably the biggest takeaway that I've gotten, you know, from just being around kids all day, is just go do it. Don't think about doing it. Don't talk about it. Don't consider it. Just go do it. So that's kind of what I'm shooting for.
When these kids fail, are they bouncing right back?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously they all have their own temperaments, and some take it better than others. But, you know, like I said, I've tried to set up the environment in my class to where it's okay. And I think I've built a culture there now where, you know, it's expected that you sing. It's cool to sing. It's not just like, you know, not just this thing that they have to do. It's something that they want to do. Anytime we get a new student who comes from another school, you know, inevitably they kind of are sitting there and they're looking around the room and everyone else is singing in this really high, like children's voice, you know, like you imagine a children's choir would. And they're looking around like, what the hell is, where am I? What's going on? My old music teacher didn't do this. And I'm like, well, you know, you're here now and this is how we do it. So you can have a freebie class today, but next time I see you, we'll be singing together, you know? And then they come in and they very quickly, they're suddenly like, oh, okay, well, this is what we do. So I'm singing. And then boom, there's another one, you know?
That's I love that. How do we get, what do you think we could do? Or what do you think we could say where we could get adults to try to start failing more? And the reason why I say that is because when you fail, the lessons that can be learned from failing are just amazing. Like when you sit back and you look at, okay, like I really just bombed this. What mm-hmm. can I learn from this? And people are afraid to fail. Like I'll give you a great example. I did my fourth presentation in Toastmasters, and I mm-hmm. get up in front of 46 people, and I had done three prior speeches, and they were I was on like a one a month speech pace. So uh-huh. I had this was my fourth month in a row. I got up there and I stood in front of, I think it was like 46 people right around there, and I gave this speech, mm-hmm. and 2 minutes into the speech, I completely froze and forgot all my content. Uh-huh. And I mean, deep down, I probably had the content in me, but I was frozen. Like, I was done. I barely stumbled my way for like another couple minutes before I kind of just bluntly cut it off. Uh-huh. And it, for those who don't know about Toastmasters, and I've spoken about this before, it's a beautiful place to fail at. It's mm-hmm. like one of the most supportive communities. But what we really need to do is start creating more hotbeds like that, creating more places where more adults can get up. And it doesn't have to be public speaking. It could just be learning a new instrument or whatever, art class or painting or doing something. But put yourself and surround yourself around people that are okay with failure, that aren't mm-hmm. going to give you a hard time and knock you off your horse because you're trying something new.
Yeah,
you got it. Because if not, you're going to be that 60-year-old bar regular who comes in and sits down at the bar and goes, hey, Bob, how you doing? Good. I got 10 fingers and 10 toes, and saying yep. the same thing over and over. Do you have any advice to get people, adults specifically, to get them out yeah, of that I comfort mean, zone?
Well, I mean, like, I'm no guru, certainly. I guess the only thing that I could say, you know, and it might sound corny, but I'm going to pull it from a lyric from a song off of an album I just released. The song's called Light of Day, and I wrote it. It was post-divorce. I went through a really rough divorce and, you know, came out on the other end, and I'm much better for it after this experience. It was rough, but, you know, I'm in a way better place. And there's a line in there that I wrote. It says, you know I can't say just how many days you've got, but I know you've still got today. So be thankful for the light of day. So it's like, I can't tell you how much longer you're going to live or what you've got, but I can tell you, you're going to have the rest of the day. So do the best you can with that. And to me, the best you can is not, you know, sitting on a couch doing nothing or being afraid to go out and hop on a bike and ride around your neighborhood or start doing whatever. I mean, like, I don't know, I'm not getting any younger. And the older I get, the more I just feel like, okay, I just need to go do more. And I think if we could all just kind of have that attitude of like, nothing is promised, you know, tomorrow is not promised at all. So make the most of today. And I think if you have that attitude, I think that kind of spurs you in the right direction. That's yeah. the best I got, man.
That attitude will definitely put you in check and run you in the right direction. You know, it's funny about the lyrics you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of a watch I just came across, and uh-huh. I don't know if you've seen this watch, and I cannot remember the name of the watch, but this watch counts down your expected death.
Oh man!
So you look at your watch, and it'll be like, okay, you have, you know, if you're 41, okay, you have 50 years and 24 uh-huh. hours, and you know, 10 minutes left or whatever it boils down to. And when I first looked at it, I'm like, man, that's just fucked up. How morbid is that? Uh-huh. You know, but then I got thinking about it. I'm like, well, there's a lot of people who get off track on a daily basis. I can't tell you how many times I get off track. I've recently gotten better, but I mean, if that's something that's going to inspire you to quit scrolling or doing whatever that is you're doing, that's just killing time and not actually living your life anymore or growing, then, you know, it's not a bad thing. I mean, it's still, I think it'd be still kind of freaky. You wake up in the morning, you're like, it's 6:30 a.m., but according to my watch, I got 45 years left.
That's a nice little self-check there every day.
So before we wrap this up, what is the what's the impact you want to have on the world?
You know, I used to think that's a heavy question, man. I used to think, you know, that okay, I'm a musician and I'm going to leave my mark on this world with my songs and they're going to live forever. And, you know, I'm proud of the music I've made and the shows I've played. I really think now the legacy is going to be left behind with, you know, teaching and eventually, you know, where I'm headed towards, I hope, is to become a teacher of teachers so that, you know, my circle of influence can be even larger. But I think, you know, I would like when I'm done to be able to look back and say, you know, that I made the world a better place because when I was on it, I was impacting kids' lives positively. And the art that hopefully you will be listening to, you know, 30 years from now, I mean, hell, 15 years from now, is going to be made by the kids that were taught how to make that art from me, you know? And so even if I never got to, you know, be whatever on MTV or whatever people's goals are these days, I don't know, but like, you know, I never sold a million records, then some kid that I taught maybe has a greater impact on, you know, the culture and the music than I did, but they did it because they learned something from me about it. And if that can happen, I think I'll be satisfied. And, you know, I think that's going to be the footprint that I leave on this earth, is the kids that I've had the opportunity to teach, and hopefully what they're going to spread out into the rest of the world because of it.
Well, you are on a very, very successful path to accomplishing that footprint. And I definitely appreciate you taking the time to join me on this podcast. And for all of our listeners out there, I will add all of Kevin's links, especially the speech, and I'll add his website for his band and all his social links. If people want to connect with you, what's your favorite spot for people to connect on you and stay social with you?
Well, you know, I guess if you could go, so my band's 23 over 4 and that's all words. So 23 over 4, you could go to 23over4.com. It's got all the social media links on there. You know, I mean, if you want to hit me up on Facebook, it's just Kevin Brawley. I'll be the goofy looking guy with the really beautiful fiance on his shoulder. So, you'll know it's me.
I love it. Well, thank you very much for your time and, joining us on episode 17. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Hey everyone. Thanks for listening to Hold That Thought. If you liked episode 17 or any of our other previous episodes, do us a favor. Head over to the iTunes Store, YouTube, Podomatic, search Hold That Thought Podcast, and throw us a like. Subscribe to us. If you want to connect with us on social, you can follow us on Twitter at HoldThat77. My name's John Samuel, and I'm out.